Joining us on the program once again, our good friend from London, nutritional consultant, Pam Colleen. How are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am terrific. I sent you a fascinating article that I think is a real conundrum for, I guess, dietitians now or new, you know, people who advise us on what to eat. Because it was in the Washington Post, and it pointed out that the way we evolved as humans involved eating large amounts of meat. That the only way we could have developed our big brains was to eat meat. That the amount of time spent eating by a gorilla, for instance, which is a vegetarian, or a, you know, I guess a vegan diet if you want, gorillas spend all their time eating just to get as much calories as they can, and they don't have big brains. We found nutrient-dense foods in meat and developed these big brains. But I don't know if we need to eat meat now, or we should limit our meat now, which seems to be, you can't have it both ways. That for us to develop and evolve and get a big brain, I still think we need, for brain health, lots of meat now.
I agree with you. And to think that we can adapt in one generation to a diet that is lower in animal fat and potentially devoid of eating red meat is unrealistic. Unfortunately, when I see people show up on my doorstep and they're so incredibly sick because they've been fat phobic, you know, cholesterol phobic, red meat phobic, you know, they get very, very sick because they're not getting the correct nutrients to keep their biochemistry in check. And genetically speaking, we just can't keep riding on this blind faith that changing our diet in one or two generations is enough time for us to adapt to it. It's just clearly not working for us. Just look around and see how sick we are today.
Well, people will point out, though, but for saturated fat, the amount of saturated fats in meat, cholesterol. I mean, it's a good source of protein, but look at all the downsides to eating meat.
Yeah, but they're wrong. But the problem is that's the wrongful demonization of some of the most critical nutrients that our brain actually needs. What we have to be able to differentiate between is real science and fake science. And that fake science is strictly done for marketing-based purposes. So the demonization of saturated fat came from the edible oil industry. That was to increase the sale of things like corn oil or soybean oil. And, of course, they have won out over the last 100 years because they've made huge profits through this demonization campaign. The sad part is, because of this demonization campaign, we have avoided the very foods that our brains actually need in order to sustain themselves. So it's a real tragedy.
I have a note from a listener. Dave on the farm wants to know, I hope, Pam, if you're going to talk about vegetarianism and veganism, and I talked about how there's very few, if any, traditional societies that have become vegan or vegetarian in terms of they just don't sustain themselves, that it just, they can't get to the next generation or the generation after that. Eventually they die out. But he says, what about the Japanese Buddhist diet or the Indian Hindu diet? And of course the Roman gladiator diet. Well, of course the Roman gladiators didn't last out. I mean, it's just all men. But what about a Japanese Buddhist diet or an Indian Hindu diet, which seems to have very little in terms of animal proteins?
Right. Well, we have to remember in the southern part of India, vegetarianism was invented in order to deal with an overpopulation problem. Veganism was invented in order to curb lust, in other words, to kill somebody's libido. This is the history of these two diets. If you look at the monks, of course, there are segments where there are monks who are following a vegan diet, and the reason for it is because it kills their sex drive. So, you know, we have to look broader than just picking on a few civilizations. You have to say to yourself, you're of Irish, Scottish descent, you're of European descent. How did your ancestors evolve? What did they eat? Because even geneticists say it can take anywhere from 10,000 to 40,000 years for our genes to adapt. I, as being somebody who is Scottish and Irish, was very naive in thinking that in one generation I could go from a diet that my ancestors thrived on, which would have consisted of about 70% animal fat in the diet. I was very naive to think that I could adapt to having no animal fat in my diet. And Health Canada is telling us that we should only eat 10% saturated fat in our diet. So you see, the level of sickness I see is from three different spectrums. I see people very, very sick following the standard American diet. I see people who are very sick who are following a vegetarian diet. And the sickest people I see are the ones who are following a vegan diet. But it's really, you know, we're ignoring the wisdom of our ancestors. And to get healthy, we have to restore that wisdom.
As well, I wanted you, you wrote me into, I wanted to touch upon the shrinking brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just in recent history, our brains have shrunk about 10%. And this coincides with the reduction in animal foods in our diet. If we go back 10,000 years, when we see the introduction of agriculture, right? That's when archaeologists first started finding that our brains were shrinking. Because back at the advent of agriculture, we would have been displacing the animal foods and replacing the animal foods with more plant-based foods. So we wouldn't have been getting the nutrients that our brains need to grow on. You know, the miracle grow of the brains, if you will. And then what we see in the last 50 to 100 years is even more of a displacement of the animal foods and replacement with more plant-based foods. And one of the culprits in that transition in our diet, of course, is the edible oil industry itself. And not only have we used these foods to displace more nutrient-dense, you know, animal fats like butter and lard and tallow, we've replaced those foods with oils that are actually damaging to our nervous system, damaging to our brains.
Let me ask you, though, in terms of when we think about, I know we've talked about calories are not the same. One calorie is not the same as another calorie, depending on the source. Because although I can derive as much energy from, you know, an equivalent amount of fat to an equivalent amount of grain or equivalent amount of meat, what is it in meats and fats that we need that we can't find anywhere else? Because if it was all about energy, oh, it'd be easy. If it was all about getting the basic amount of calories, well, there's 1,000 places you can get it. But we often talk about empty calories. You know, sugar, for instance, is an empty calorie. There's nothing there but energy, which your body does need. However, it needs, what else does it need that are available in, as we call, nutrient-dense foods that are not available in simple carbs or starches?
Oh, and that's a good point. And that's how I was misled as a vegetarian. I thought I could replace animal foods with plant-based foods, and they would provide me with the same nutrients. And that's just not so. Well, one of the components that you'd be missing out on if you reduce or eliminate animal foods in your diet is you won't get enough of what are known as the long-chain fatty acids. These are things called EPA, DHA, and arachidonic acid, for example. And these are fats that you would want, that you need to get from animal fats. And unfortunately, you're just not going to find a replacement by eating broccoli or beans.
So what do those fats do? What do those essential fatty acids do, though? Because I think this is that one step where people, you know, they hear that they need them, but they don't understand why they need them.
Well, they're Miracle-Gro for the brain. This is what they are. They're supporting brain health. They're supporting the health of your cell membranes. You know, you're only as healthy as your cell membrane. So you've got to give the cell membrane the proper fuel, the proper component, so that it is very, very stable. And unfortunately, if you're not eating the proper fats, this is like your foundation for your house, Tom. Like, if you're not using the correct equipment to build your house, it's going to fall apart. And the same thing goes with your cell membrane and some of the key fats that you need in order to have a healthy cell membrane would be these fats like EPA, DHA, and arachidonic acid. And you also need dietary cholesterol. You can't just rely on your body to build cholesterol. You must get outside sources of cholesterol as well in order to bind or glue the cell membrane together.
One of the interesting things, and as you've pointed out, and I always, I don't know if it's scientific, but in terms of finding myself, my own reaction is with cholesterol, especially as you point out, you can't make sex hormones without cholesterol. That this is what, for a society to reproduce, they need a proper amount of sex hormones. And in terms of, you know, your own libido, you better make sure you get some cholesterol into your body, because that testosterone and estrogen are derived directly from cholesterol.
That's right. And within the animal fat, of course, you're going to get vitamin A. You're not going to get vitamin A from eating carrots and tomatoes. You have to get vitamin A from animal fats. And it's that vitamin A that helps the conversion of the actual hormones as well. So you need the dietary cholesterol in there, yes, but you also need the vitamin A that's in there in order to allow for the conversion of the hormones to take place. So it's quite a constellation of ingredients that are in animal fats that are keeping you in balance, that are keeping your hormones in check, allowing for neurotransmitters to communicate properly, for your cell membranes to be healthy, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not just isolating. It's nice to know what these nutrients do in isolation, but they must also be in combination with each other.
Pam Colleen joins us on the program every couple of weeks. She's a nutritional consultant, and we have a real conundrum in terms of the holiday season, because everyone, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because I wonder what the connection is, if I have the cart before the horse, but because we eat so much, and maybe, you know, we eat too many sweets, but we eat so much during the holidays, and it's a happy time. And then people have this resolution after January to lose weight. And because we try to lose weight, but we deprive ourselves, we get miserable. We get miserable. And then it's like, it just goes back. You know what? If you eat the right foods all the time, you never have to worry about your moods, because your brain, I mean, we're so worried about our waistline and not our brain that we just focus on the wrong thing. I always think that it's like, you know what? Why don't you focus on being happy and emotionally balanced rather than I got to fit into that pair of jeans? Anyway, I want your comments when we come back, Pam, on our focus on, especially this time of year, because they have so many people, yeah, I got to watch what I eat, and January I'll start my diet, and we focus so much on pounds, rather than we never make that connection between what we eat, but how emotionally healthy we are. We always think about a physical healthy, but it's also emotionally healthy as well. 18 minutes after 11 o'clock, this is News Talk 610 CKTV.
Work.
22 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen joins us on the program. I have a couple questions via text message for you, Pamela.
Okay.
Can you ask her this, says Nat. I've recently had blood tests that indicated that my liver fats count is high. I have to go for more testing. I've recently increased fats and meats due to hearing about being brain food. Should I decrease fats? Nat. So there we have that mixed message of, or maybe not mixed message, but, you know, you should eat this for your brain, but well, what about this liver fat count? What's going on there?
Well, the fatty liver, if you look at things like the research around high fructose corn syrup, for example, they've associated that, the consumption of high fructose corn syrup, to fatty liver disease. But we can, you know, when you look at people who've been eating too many carbohydrates, this is very, very hard on the liver. You know, that's high fructose corn syrup just happens to be a very concentrated source of sugar. But then if you look at our overall diet, it's very, very high in carbohydrates, and that's very, very hard on the liver.
So you don't think her increased fat consumption leads to a higher liver fat count?
I can't see that connection, because when we ate a lot of fat in our diet as a society, we didn't have. We weren't doing testing 100 years ago, but this fatty liver disease issue is a new issue in society, and it's been an increasing problem since we've been increasing our consumption of high fructose corn syrup. So, you know, when Mother Nature gave us all the right components so that we could be healthy, you know, our blueprint is supposed to be of health, not of sickness, and we evolved over millions of years trying to figure out exactly how to be healthy, not how to be sick. And so when we eat according to our ancestors, who were much, much healthier than we are, this is a golden rule. This is a very simple approach to being healthy, although it's heavily ignored, you know, by the mainstream system. They're not acknowledging how simple it can be to be healthy. They want to make it super, super complicated for us. So all I ask people to do is let's return to common sense. When we ate 3 square meals a day, when we ate about 70% of our calories from animal fat, we didn't have to worry about things like fatty liver disease.
All right, she says, wait. She follows up. I've been on a high-protein diet for over a year and lost 75 pounds. I don't eat carbs or as little as possible. So it seems that everything but her, I mean...
But a high-protein diet is hard on the liver, right?
Oh, okay.
See, this is where the paleo diet has gone very wrong, is they endorse a diet high in protein, but that in and of itself is very damaging to the liver. Where the paleo people the entire time should have been focusing on the animal fats, and they're only gradually catching on to this right now. But sadly, a lot of people have been following a high-protein diet, and that is not the correct way to go.
Here's a question. Ask Pam to explain depression this time of year. I'm going through that right now, LOL. Is that, I mean, the seasonal affected disorder, obviously, we can't change the amount of sunlight, which, you know, scientists have said, yeah, get out in the sun and you'll be less depressed. I can't change the amount of sunlight. I'm in the Northern Hemisphere. It's the winter. How do I compensate?
Yeah, well, depression is a very complex illness when you look at the biochemical causes that are behind it. So yes, it's something that maybe an individual who goes south for a week and gets some sunshine, they might come back feeling better, but I don't think it's really fixing the problem. You need to look at things like your blood sugar control. You need to see, you need to do things to strengthen your adrenal glands. You need to obviously eat more animal fat in your diet. But in terms of supplementation, that's risky because if you don't know your baseline biochemistry, supplements can actually backfire on you.
What supplements? Like typically people who don't get sunshine would take D3. That seems to be the...
D3, but also make sure you're getting cod liver oil. Every single one of my students, I tell them all, I want them on cod liver oil. That's, for me, the premier supplement is to make sure you're taking in a good cod liver oil. There's different price ranges for cod liver oils on the market. There's some that are excellent and there's some that are good. I just want people to find a decent one that doesn't break your budget.
Okay, what does cod liver oil do?
Well, essentially, it's a really good source of the vitamin A and the vitamin D. So vitamin A is crucial for the functioning, well, they both are crucial for the functioning of your adrenal glands, for example. And so they provide a lot of different benefits in terms of their nutrients earlier, or in terms of what I was talking about earlier with the vitamin A, Tom. The vitamin A, of course, isn't necessary in terms of the conversion of your hormones, but vitamin A is also crucial for your thyroid and your adrenal function. So you need to have those two nutrients today, sadly, because the animals that we're eating, the animal foods that we are eating, are in confinement settings, and so the vitamin A and vitamin D will be very nominal potentially in these foods. So sadly, we do have to supplement with the cod liver oil. Our ancestors would have got a lot of vitamin A and vitamin D in their diet because they didn't have fat phobia and because the animal foods they were eating were from animals that were either out on pasture or wild.
Does it still taste terrible? That's always the knock against cod liver oil.
Well, there's different brands out there, and some of them have a lemon flavor, orange flavor, cinnamon flavor. I mean, they can be
cinnamon?
Liquid or they can be capsule.
It's not only a good for you, it's a breath mint as well. Cinnamon? Really? I've never tried cod liver oil. You're making me want to try it.
Yeah, give it a try. You know, your kids should be on it as well. I mean, before World War II, all children were given cod liver oil. But after the rise of Big Pharma post-World War II, unfortunately, the practice of giving kids cod liver oil fell out of favor. So,
all right, final one. Actually, you know what? Can you come back for a segment?
I can do one. Yeah, I can do another segment. Sure.
All right, okay. Well, just 10 minutes, all right? Because
sure.
I got a couple of follow-ups and a couple of diet questions people have texted me in, and I don't want to leave them hanging.
Okay, sounds
fair
good.
Enough. Yeah. All right, we'll continue with Pam Colleen just for a few minutes after the break. Stephanie Sabrin coming up next with the news on 610 CKTV. Now, back to Pam Colleen. Thank you for holding on, Pamela. So Nat, who had the question originally about the liver fats, has a follow-up to that. And she says, okay. How do I, as she said, you know what, I've been on a high protein diet, and you said, you know what, that's probably the problem. Although, as you said, you not replacing it with carbs, but how do you moderate the diet to lower my chance of getting fatty liver disease? Or do you suggest someone to see for professional help? And by the way, she takes cod liver oil in capsule, so you can't taste it, but when she burps, it tastes like fish. She just wanted us to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a complex question. It's a complex answer. It's hard to fix the biochemistry once it has been thrown out of balance. So it even sounds like she has digestive issues going on. I mean, it takes me 2 years to get somebody to restore their biochemistry. It's a very, very complicated process. But all depending on where she's at with her comfort levels, I mean, yes, if she wanted to go to medical doctors, I just don't see what medical doctors are going to be able to do. I mean, I don't know of any system out there in place to treat fatty liver disease. You know, the diet is a big part of it, but yet so many people think they're eating a healthy diet, and there's still many things that need to be improved upon. It's something that you have to spend a lot of time studying. I have menus and meal ideas on my website. There's instructional videos. I instruct people to watch Sally Fallon's YouTubes. There's hours and hours and hours of Sally Fallon's seminars on YouTube for free. So these are all good starts for people. But unfortunately, what I find, because the biochemistry is so stubborn and it's very difficult to get it to return to running on all eight cylinders, that's when people come to me. But diet can only take people so far, I find. And then they have to actually do some extra fine-tuning. So, you know, this is where I put people on a full program. Some people go on disability just to do my program. That's how sick they are. And that's how difficult it is to turn the biochemistry around. It takes a tremendous amount of effort on behalf of the client.
Here's an interesting question for someone. Listen to the stats, and it sounds everything's great, but tell me what's wrong here. Can you ask Pam about the right amount of daily protein intake? I'm 30 years old. Fitness bodybuilding is my everyday life. 6'2", 185 pounds, 9% body fat. I take 3 protein shakes a day, which total 100 grams. Too much or too little?
Well, I would take out the protein powders for sure.
Okay. And you've talked about that before, and why are you against protein powders?
I have at least 3 or 4 reasons why I discourage people from using protein powders. One is because in nature, fat and protein are together. They're not isolated.
Okay.
And we know that there's a lot of liver problems when people are eating a high-protein diet. Secondly, protein powders, if you look at the label, you'll see that there's an exaggeratedly high amount of aspartic acid and glutamic acid. That means there's high levels of aspartame and MSG inherently high in the product. Aspartame and MSG, we know, are associated with brain tumors. So I would highly recommend that you read the book Excitotoxins by Dr. Russell Blaylock. And finally, Consumer Reports a few years ago published research just randomly testing protein powders and found that several of them had unacceptably high levels of heavy metals in the product. The protein powders are essentially a waste product. You know, the whey proteins, for example, that should have been fed to pigs, but they can make more money drying it up and selling it to humans as a food, when really I consider it a non-food. So I think we have to return to common sense. Sit down, eat 3 square meals a day. The size of protein that you should be eating should be the size of the back of your hand. So if you're a bigger person, of course, that means a bigger piece of protein. This is a very simple rule that I teach my students. And then, of course, it shouldn't be a lean piece of meat or chicken. If it's chicken, the skin should be on it so that you get extra fat. And the meat should be fatty. And if it's not fatty, then cook it in butter so that there's some extra fat there.
Pam Colleen, if people want more information, your website, of course, pamcolleen.com, correct?
That's right. That's my website, and my email is pam@pamcolleen.com.
One of the things, and I'll just leave on this note, in terms of one of the things, and I can't remember if you said this or if your counterpart, Lisa Petty, who is on the other Wednesday, said this, but I found it true, and I found it, I'm much more mindful when I'm eating or snacking, and that is the body will let you know when it's eaten too much protein or fat. I'm full, I don't need to eat anymore. However, there is no stop signal for carbohydrates. That the body, until your stomach is full, it doesn't stop. And you're like a dog. You'll eat until you get sick. That carbs, and one of the reasons why we, as we've been so fat phobic, but gotten fatter as a society, as we've gotten more overweight, is because we've focused so much on, oh, yeah, carbs, 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 carbs. And we realize, well, maybe that's wrong, because your body doesn't know when to shut down from carbs.
Oh, yeah, and you can get a great high. You can get a great buzz from eating lots of carbs.
And the funny thing is, when I eat, if I eat a small piece of cheese or some meat or whatever, it satisfies me. So much faster than if I sat down and had chips or crackers or a piece of bread or whatever, I could eat another one and another one and another. And that's why people go through a box of cookies or a bag of chips because be mindful of that this holiday season when you're snacking. I know people are going to go out and they have parties and all this is going to go on. You're surrounded by food. But when you think the worst thing is the simplest thing.
Well, you know, and you just listen to the testimonials. If you remember, we were talking about wheat belly. By Dr. William Davis. And what you were saying earlier is so true. You could get started on your weight control program today. Just make sure you're eating more animal fat in the diet. Get inspired by some of the testimonials that Dr. Davis shares on his blog and in his book, Wheat Belly. I mean, he has patients where they start reducing their consumption of carbs and start increasing their consumption of animal fat. And within a week, not only are they feeling better, their weight loss is already happening. So it's immediate. So there's no sense in creating a New Year's resolution. You can do all of this today.
That's right. That's right. And just when you're out and when you're about, and I know this is the season of celebrating and I'll put it off, but you can still be mindful. And it's like, you know what? Go to the cheese tray, not the cookie tray, and you'll be much better off. You'll get more satisfied. You'll have a better snack. You'll eat far less. It'll be far better for your body. Find those nutrient dense foods rather than the cheap foods, which, you know, it's a calorie is not a calorie is not a calorie. You will eat far less if you look for nutrient dense foods that are high in fats and proteins together.
Yeah. And when people do that, they always report back to me, even within a few days, they start feeling better.
Pamela, I'll leave it at that. Always a pleasure. We'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Tom. You take care.
Pam Colleen. She's at pamcolleen.com if you want more information. She's from London. I got to know her, actually. She was on in London, and she came down to do a book signing. And she said, hey, I'm on with your former colleague, Andy Udman. I'm doing a book signing. Could I come on the air? And I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. And since then, we've had a great reaction to her. She will tell you stuff that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And it's great. I love having her in with Lisa Petty because they have slightly different focuses, but oftentimes they come to the same conclusion. And Lisa has talked about that book as well, Wheat Belly. Now, we can't completely eliminate wheat from our diet. You know, we cultivated grains 10,000 years ago, but our reliance on them as an energy source is probably too much. And it's hard to look at, since the 70s, we've reduced the consumption of fat in our diet, dietary fat in our diet, yet, we all know this, we're fatter than ever. We're eating less fat and we're fatter than ever, that's right. It's because there's an off switch when you consume fat. There isn't when you consume carbs. There is no switch in the body that says, I've had enough carbs. That's why you can go through the cookies. That's why you can go through the chips, the French fries. That's why you can eat as many until you're stomach is physically full and you're okay, I can't eat anymore. That's it. It's not a signal from the body other than my stomach is full. Not that I've satisfied my hunger. Two different signals. 44 minutes after 11 o'clock. Now, for the gift certificates from